It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The verdict is in. Milwaukee Judge Hannah Dugan was found guilty of obstructing immigration agents as they attempted to arrest an undocumented defendant in April. A jury found Dugan not guilty on a misdemeanor charge of concealing an individual to prevent arrest.
Judge Dugan's defense argued that the Trump administration was making an example of the judge as the White House increases immigration enforcement nationwide. The prosecution said Dugan knowingly tried to impede agents.
WPR state government reporter Sarah Lear has been following the trial in Milwaukee. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Hello.
Some people were puzzled, I think, Sarah, by the split decision, guilty of the felony, not guilty of the misdemeanor. What did those charges mean? How did they differ?
Well, Dugan was found guilty of the more serious charge against her, which was endeavoring to impede or obstruct an official proceeding. The judge explained to jurors that that includes a proceeding of a federal agency, you know, for example, Department of Homeland Security, which includes ICE. But Dugan was found not guilty of the less serious charge against her, which was concealing an individual to prevent his discovery and arrest. In order to be guilty of the concealment charge, the judge said Dugan had to have taken affirmative physical steps to try and hide someone or keep him out of sight. For both of these charges, prosecutors had to prove that Dugan acted knowingly, meaning that she knew that she was obstructing or concealing. And these all stem from an incident that happened at the Milwaukee County Courthouse just a few days before Easter. Federal agents had shown up with a warrant to take a man into custody for being in the country illegally. That man was on the docket in Dugan's courtroom that day. And in the morning, Dugan called that man's case, and she directed the man and his attorney out a side door of the courtroom. It's normally used for jurors, and she said his hearing would be rescheduled over Zoom.
What was the reaction like when that, especially that guilty announcement was made?
It was quiet. I don't remember any audible reaction. I could not see Judge Dugan's face from where I was sitting behind her. I do remember a rush of reporters kind of going out to see if they could contact jurors as they left the hallway. The media is strictly prohibited from talking to jurors while the case is ongoing. But once the verdict is over, jurors have the option to talk to the media if they so choose.
You've been covering this trial since it started. The prosecution's approach, and you've said it, I've heard it in your news coverage, they tried to really untangle this idea that, no, this is not about judges and administration policy. It's about this one case. Is that about right?
That's right. You know, during the jury selection process, there were a lot of questions. How do you feel about the federal government? How do you feel about immigration enforcement? And one of the prosecutors made the pitch to jurors, you know, reasonable people can disagree on immigration policy, but the way she framed it, she said, this case isn't about personal views. It's about whether or not a judge chooses to break the law. And prosecutors argued that Dugan had broken the law. They emphasized that Dugan's actions were highly unusual that day, and they say she knew what she was doing was wrong. That included playing courtroom audio in which you hear someone say, I'll do it, I'll take the heat. Prosecutors said that audio was Dugan expressing that she knew she was doing something wrong that could result in her getting into trouble.
What is the potential sentence for this felony conviction?
So that is the more serious charge that was against her because she was found not guilty of the less serious charge. And the charge for which she was convicted could carry up to 5 years in prison, but that is extremely unlikely in Dugan's case. A date for sentencing hasn't been set yet. And one of Dugan's defense attorneys, Steve Biskupic, told reporters late Thursday, the case is a long way from over. So he kind of indicated that they were exploring legal options. He didn't say much about that, but he did sort of give a hint. He said, look, there was this split verdict, and he kind of indicated that to him it didn't really make sense. And he said, how could she be found guilty of one count and not another? And he said, you know, in his view, there are certain elements that you need to prove both counts against her. And, you know, so how could you prove one and not the other?
Still more to watch on a potential appeal. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Sarah Lear, state government reporter here at WPR. Now, Howard Schwaber joins us, professor emeritus of political science at UW-Madison, affiliate of the UW Law School. Howard, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Your reaction, Howard, when you heard this verdict come out last night?
Well, I'm not shocked that there was a guilty verdict. All along, the prosecution's case has seemed fairly strong. The hard parts were two. One, they had to prove that the judge intended to impede the arrest process. And the defense, you know, seemed to have a pretty good response to that when they pointed out that the side corridor in question comes out only 5 feet away from the main door of the courtroom. The problem is that, of course, at the trial, it turned out there was a doorway in that corridor that led to another floor. The point is, there was a pretty plausible case on the basis of which the jury could conclude that the judge was trying, or intended it to be the case, that this guy avoid or evade the immigration authorities. I'm not saying it was a necessary conclusion, but it was certainly a plausible conclusion. On the other hand, as Sarah just pointed out, and Steve Buscovic made this point, how did she intend to impede other than by hiding this guy away from these agents? It appears that the judge's trial instructions had some very specific elements involving physical acts, and perhaps that'll be the basis for an appeal by the defense. The big question here, the big point here, is that the prosecution succeeded in making the case only about what happened during a few minutes in one courtroom, and the defense did not succeed in making this case a referendum on the really, frankly, horrendous practices of immigration authorities invading courthouses and courtrooms. As long as that larger context is left out, right, then it's hard to explain that she didn't do anything wrong. The defense's strong argument would be it's just an error of judgment. It wasn't an intent to do anything criminal. That comment about "I'll take the heat" had to do with doing something controversial, not knowledge that something was criminally wrong. But apparently that argument didn't sway the jury. So short answer, I'm sorry, that was long. The short answer is I'm not shocked by the verdict. And I have to say, I don't see a strong basis for appeal.
Now, the defense tried to make the case that, hey, this is part of a wider effort to intimidate judges related to immigration issues. And that has been a lot of the political read on this, Howard. Brad Schimmel, interim U.S. attorney, said, I'm going to quote here, "We weren't trying to make an example out of anyone. This was necessary to hold Judge Dugan accountable because of the actions she took. There's not a political aspect to it." So, again, the prosecution saying, hey, don't read a wider message into it. Should we read a wider message into it, though?
Yes, absolutely. And Schimmel is being disingenuous at best. I mean, Brad Schimmel hasn't had a non-political moment in his career. It is preposterous that this judge was arrested and let out in handcuffs. It is unthinkable that this case would have been brought a year ago. And absolutely, the political context has everything to do with the charging decision, the manner in which the agents behave, and the manner in which this case proceeded. All that being said, however, the verdict does not necessarily depend on the context. And precisely what the defense tried to do is to get the jurors to see this as a larger political question. And apparently that's what the jurors declined to do. So yes, the political context here is absolutely an attempt by the Trump administration and their allies to intimidate state and local judges, to send a message, don't get in our way or we'll come after you, to chill the operations of courtrooms, and to ensure that their agents have free rein throughout courthouses, despite the disruptive effect that has on proceedings. But all of that can be formalistically separated from the legal verdict. And that's the point at which the prosecution won.
Now, you mentioned the question of intent you thought would be difficult to make an appeal based on that. We've seen in some national cases, James Comey, Letitia James, and others targeted by the Trump administration coming to the court saying, hey, this is malicious prosecution based on a political agenda. Could there be an appeal here based on that argument?
I don't think so. So, I mean, those cases involved bringing charges in situations where charges were not brought against many, many other people who did exactly the same thing and in which elements of the alleged offense could not be shown. That's not really true here. It's not all that common. In fact, I think it's extraordinarily rare for a judge to send a defendant out by a side entrance. We don't know of other cases where that's happened. Decisions have been made not to file charges. Again, I can't overemphasize enough how much the political context is real and is what's truly driving this proceeding. But whether you can make that a legal argument to say that the prosecution was improper is a very different question. And I have to say that I'm skeptical.
I've seen people suggesting this case could be a precedent in some way, but on the other hand, the particulars were so important here. Is this a precedent in a case where a judge walks a defendant who might be arrested and says, "I'll take the heat"? Like, is this a precedent with such particular elements to it that it won't be a precedent in many other cases?
Well, I mean, there's sort of two senses of the word precedent. It's precedent in the sense that I think it's absolutely true that federal prosecutors around the country will take this as a green light to go after local and state judges who get in the way of immigration enforcement. Whether in one of those future cases the verdict will be the same will depend on the very specific facts. But I do think this is a signal, and I can't emphasize this enough, to judges everywhere. You know, the feds will come after you if you get in the way of what we're trying to do in our immigration sweeps.
Do you see judges potentially changing their behavior, the way they manage courtrooms, as a result of this verdict?
Yes, absolutely. I think this will have a chilling effect on lots of things. One thing that may happen is judges may become more prone to using Zoom meetings just to avoid these situations arising. But conversely, I think there's no question that judges will be hesitant to order agents out of the courtroom or order the entrance to the courtroom to be kept clear or take other steps that previously they would have thought to be squarely within their prerogative as just maintaining control over their space. Now they have to consider the possibility that an aggressive federal prosecutor might come after them with a charge.
Very briefly, Howard, if I'm a judge, I say we're going to do this hearing by Zoom instead of in person because, and the subject is because we're worried about ICE arrests. Is that stopping ICE? Is that interfering with a potential arrest?
Nobody knows. Right, as you say, it's a subtext. Certainly don't say it out loud. And I mean, I think we're going to wait to see. Will they go after some judge who does that? Right, and trying to make that argument. That's the sense in which this case is a precedent, not a legal precedent, but it's a step in a direction of more prosecutions with more imaginative theories to try and suppress the ability of courts to defend people against the actions of immigration officers.
Howard, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Howard Schwaber, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UW-Madison, affiliate of the UW Law School. We also heard from our reporter, Sarah Lear, talking about Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan and her guilty verdict for a felony charge.